Caroline, Willie, D Mays, 1025, 1063, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Nick Frazier is back at our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. I'm on remote today, but Willie Donick and D Mace are at Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena. Game six tonight. Win or Cancun for the Predators. Big one tonight. One big topic of conversation we've been talking about all series long is how offense and just really goals in general have been so hard to come by on both ends. Really, one stat that you bring up that I think is telling is 12 goals total through five games. Shocking for two teams whose calling cards this past season has been the offense. Adam Vingan may have an explanation for us, a diagnosis, if you will. And Adam Vingan joins us now to break it down. Adam, you had a great article on Sportsnet come out today, and the headline is "Why the Canucks Have Struggled to Generate Playoff Offense." What did you come up with? Your analytical breakdown of why specifically the Canucks have struggled to generate offense so far in the series.
To put the Canucks' lack of shot generation in perspective, they have 92 shots through five games. It's an average of 18.4 shots per game. The 92 shots are the second fewest through five games in any playoff series since the NHL began tracking shots on goal in 1959. The only team who had fewer than the Canucks' 92 shots through five games was the 1998 Washington Capitals, who had 90 shots on goal through five games of their conference semifinal series against the Senators, a series they won in five games. So they finished that series with 90 shots on goal. So one thing I was looking at when trying to figure out what the issue was, one thing that stood out to me was the Canucks have been woefully inaccurate from the slot, which is where a majority of goals are scored. They have hit the net on less than 50% of their shot attempts from the slot through five games, which is the lowest among playoff teams. Every other playoff team, including the ones that have been eliminated, are over 50% from the slot. It's 46.1% to be exact. The Canucks have only hit the net on 46.1% of their shot attempts from the slot. During the regular season, they shot 59.7% in terms of shots that from the slot that hit the net. So a big difference there. And I thought that Rick Tocchet said something really interesting after game five. He was talking about how he felt like the Canucks have been trying to hit the back door a lot on UC Saros, and they've missed that quite a bit. You know, the one chance that comes to mind, I can't recall which game it was, but Suter had a really great chance on the backdoor feed, I think from JT Miller cross ice, that just, you know, went off of his stick and missed. It would have been a bang bang goal had he gotten his stick on it in the right way. And Rick Tocchet also said that he wants them to have that shot mentality to create rebounds, because the Canucks were one of the best teams in the league during the regular season in scoring goals off of rebounds. The only team actually who scored more rebound goals than the Canucks in the regular season was the Predators. So that's one thing that the Canucks have been unable to do in this series. They have 0 goals off of rebounds through five games. So to boil it down, it's just the Canucks, when they get to the area where the majority of goals are being scored in the league, they have missed the net way too much, and they haven't been able to create and score off of rebounds against UC Saros.
And it is funny how it wasn't very long ago that you and I were talking about, we all were talking about how the Predators' defense after the 18-game point streak had kind of seemed to take a little bit of a dip before the playoffs. Now we're talking about how the Predators' defense might be, you know, saving their butts in this series. And looking at this quote that you included in your article on Sportsnet, and Rick Tocchet's talking about, you know, they're out of position, they're shooting the puck too close into UC Saros's glove. So when you're looking at the lack of offense from the Canucks in your little pie chart, how much of a section would go to the Predators and their defensive effort, and how much of it is the Canucks are just trying to do too much?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, it might be a pretty even split. I think the Predators, we did talk about this near the end of the regular season, about how the Predators' defensive play after that point streak ended had slipped. And that was the one thing that was of most concern to me, was whether or not they were going to get back to playing solid team defense, especially right in front of the net. And I feel like they've done that in this series, you know, preventing the Canucks from getting clean looks at the net in the slot. You know, the Predators have allowed 8.2 slot shots on net per game in this series. That's the best mark of any team in the playoffs. So they have done a really good job of preventing the Canucks from hitting the net from there. And I think it's because of, A, you know, they've done a good job of shot blocking, as we know, especially in game two. And B, the Canucks, as Rick Tocchet was explaining in the quote after the game, I think the Canucks are trying to be a little too fancy around the net. I think if they can just get back to peppering UC Soros as best they can, create rebounds and try to create some havoc in and around the crease. Like, think about the goal that Brock Besser scored to tie the game in game four. Now, I know that was a 6-on-5, but there was a lot of bodies around the net. The puck was bouncing and he was there to put it in. They need more goals like that if they're going to win this series. And the Predators, to their credit, have done a good job of preventing them from doing so.
Now, Adam, why do you think because you bring this up and looking at it, it's like, wow, okay. But why do you think so much emphasis is being put on the defensive play of Vancouver rather than the defensive play of the Nashville Predators? Because it goes hand in hand. Listen, they don't have the shots. Why? Because the Nashville Predators are playing really good defense on our end, on the opposite end of the ice. But why hasn't there been more, talk about the Nashville Predators defense rather than the Vancouver's defense?
Well, I think the fact that the Canucks are doing something that is historic in the wrong way.
Exactly.
You know, the
mm-hmm.
Predators have held the Canucks to set 92 shots on goal. As I said, second fewest through five games of any playoff series since the league began tracking shots on net, like 60 years ago or whatever it was. I'm not good at that. I can't do that quick math. But the point is that the Predators have the thing is, the Canucks actually were not a great shot-generating team during the regular season. Mm-hmm. They were one of the worst shot-generating teams during the regular season. But they averaged 28.4 shots per game during the regular season, which means they're averaging 10 fewer shots per game, exactly 10 fewer shots per game in the playoffs than they did in the regular season. The key for the Canucks is that they were incredibly efficient. They weren't taking a lot of shots, but they were scoring on a lot of them. And then I guess you could say that's what's happening in this series too. They haven't taken a lot of shots, but they have scored enough to have a 3-2 series lead. So I think the reason why there's more emphasis on what the Predators are doing defensively is because they're holding the Canucks to historic levels of a lack of shots, for lack of a better term.
So you think that's what has contributed to the series being the way that it is, and why, you know, Vancouver, even though they're not getting as many shots on goal, but the shots they are taking, they're making do on them. And is that sometimes the hardest thing to defend, is a team that doesn't take a lot of shots, but they're patient with their shots?
Yeah, that's a good question. That is a really good question. And I mean, look, the fewer shots on goal you can allow, the better, mm-hmm. right? Like, the Canucks had how many attempts did they have in game two? Like 84 or something like
right.
that? But the Predators blocked 30 shots. So, and I think, you know, and the Canucks, what they haven't been, they haven't been getting a ton of looks from the slot in general, and they haven't been able to hit the net either. So that's the thing is, if you're Andrew Burnett and you're looking at the fact that your team gave up 84 shot attempts in game two, you don't like that. But the fact that you blocked 30 and held them to, I don't remember how many shots on goal they had in game two, but they didn't have a lot. Like, you take that as a coach, because that means you're forcing the Canucks to make those changes. You're getting in shot lanes. So that means that you're either blocking the shot, or because they're expecting you to block the shot, they're maybe having to move over a slight, they hesitate for a second, or move away from where they were going to shoot, and therefore maybe they don't have as great of a shooting lane as they would have had on the original location of the shot, if that makes sense.
Adam Bingham is with us. Adam, I think you touched on a really important part of this whole equation, that probably has not been emphasized as much in some of the commentary I hear, and that is how tough it has been for both teams. Because you mentioned the Canucks haven't gotten to rebounds. I don't know what you would classify Besser's game-tying goal in the closing seconds. That was more of a scramble. He kind of got his own rebound in some fashion because I think he banked it off the side of the cage, but technically that's not a rebound, but maybe that's the closest one. And I was going back through Nashville's 12 goals. The only rebound I could see that was a clear one was Sissons on a rush in a 3-on-2 situation. He got a rebound and put it in game two. So both teams are really struggling to get the rebounds. And one thing I notice about, and you mentioned how important that is to Nashville's offense. They got to a lot of rebounds in the regular season. But Tyler Myers and Soucy and Zadorov, these giants that they have in there, those guys are tough to get rebounds on.
No, that is correct. And at least according to Sport Logic, the Canucks have zero rebound goals. So Besser's goal must not have counted as a rebound goal. And you're right, Willie. The only rebound goal the Predators have scored in this series was that Sissons goal you're referring to. So these teams were 1-2 in the regular season in rebound goal score. So it's a huge part of their game, both teams, and they haven't been able to do that. And you're right. I think part of the issue on the Predator side is, as you said, the size of their defensemen. Like, you know, Zadorov is a big guy, and you know Myers is a big guy. I feel like Carson Soucy is like I didn't realize how big he was.
Me either.
Until
he's
was
big.
Watching him more regularly.
He's a big dude. 6'4",
yeah,
I think.
He's listed at 6'5", 208. And Myers is 6'8", 229. And Zadorov is 6'6", 248, according to the roster that I'm looking at. So they've got monsters among men on the back end, and that helps them clear out the crease. And I think Zadorov in particular has had a really good series on both ends. But that does play a role in it for sure. You know, the Predators have – and look, like even Ian Cole, who's not a big guy, like stature-wise, you know, he's as rough and tumble as they come. Mm-hmm. And he's been there – I mean, what is this? This is his eighth team he's been in the playoffs with in his career. He's won the Stanley Cup. He's as hard-nosed as it gets. So even though he's not as big as his other defensemen, he's really good. I mean, think about the shot block he had at the end of game three, was it? You know, blocking Yossi and then taking the puck off the side of the head from Ryan O'Reilly. Like, Cole is a shot-blocking savant. So, the Canucks defense has made it very difficult.
You know, I want to add, Jack Adams came out today, Adam, and to nobody's surprise at all, it was Brunette and Tocchet in there in the final three. The third guy was Rick Bonus, who I did have in my top three as well. Those are the three guys that I had. Mm-hmm. But I think of a guy like Zadorov. You mentioned he scored a big goal. He scored two goals, so that always gets you headlines. He hasn't been a goal scorer in his career, but he's got seven since the All-Star break, which really surprised me. And so it just kind of dawned on me that Rick Tocchet deserves a lot of credit for getting a lot out of this guy. Like, he's always been a physical beast and a monster, but I always have looked at him in the past at his various stops as a little bit more of a wild card, a little bit of an X factor that could be your best player one night, but also the reason your team lose some nights. But I think he's really put his best hockey together under Rick Tocchet since he was traded to them. What are your thoughts on him? Because historically, I haven't seen him as an elite player, but I think he's getting elite minutes out of him.
I just want to say this as it relates to the Jack Adams. I think you and your fellow broadcasters nailed it with Rick Tocchet and Andrew Brunette. If it were up to me, I think that third spot was earmarked for John Tortorella until the Flyers unraveled down the stretch. I would have loved to have seen Spencer Carberry get that third spot. I mean, what he did with that Capitals team this year, I think he absolutely deserved at least to be a finalist. I'm not criticizing you, Willie.
Yeah.
I think
it's fair. I struggled with that too. I thought Carberry did a phenomenal job based on their numbers and what was expected of them too. They overachieved to get to the playoffs. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, the thing about Zadorov that I think that's an underrated aspect of his game is the guy can move.
Like, yes.
He's a big boy out there. Like, and the defensemen of that size aren't always the most fleet-footed. But he is. And, I mean, you've seen it a couple. I think you saw it on that goal in game five. You know, he can get up and he can get up and move despite being 6'6 and 250 pounds. I mean, he is one of the biggest players. He's one of the biggest skaters in the NHL, forwards and defensemen. And he can get up and move. And I think that's an aspect of his game that is underappreciated. But you're right. Like, Zadorov is sort of a feast or famine player. I think you described it perfectly. He's the kind of guy that can make a huge play to help your team win, or he can make a boneheaded play to put your team on the penalty kill or to lose. But, you know, it's funny. You know, he's been around. He's played for a lot of different teams, but, you know, he regularly shows up in the playoffs. Like, he played for the Avalanche in the playoffs. He was on the Avalanche in 2017-18 when the Predators played the Avalanche in the first round. He went to the playoffs with Calgary once, and now he's back in it with Vancouver. Like, whatever the knock is on Nikita Zadorov, the guy does contribute to teams that make the playoffs. So that's a credit to him.
All right, last thing for you, Adam. I know shots have been hard to come by for all players in this series. One that has surprised me to this point, but I think if you look closely, the last two games have been his best two games. But Roman Josi, if you'd have told me before the series started that he would only have 9 shots on goal in the first 5 games, I would have said, wow, that is not good for the Predators at all. I look at him, though. I'm wondering if he's figuring it out a little bit on how to get a little bit more offense. But I think you have to credit Vancouver for doing a good job on him. And I think by the same token, Nashville has done a good job on Quinn Hughes, their Vezina Trophy guy. I think even though he's got more points, I think they've done a pretty good job of not letting him just take over the series. So both teams have sort of neutralized the ace defenseman for the other team.
Yeah, and that, to me, that was like the matchup within the matchup entering the series, was how those two defensemen were going to play. And I talked to JT Miller after game four just about the pressure and the physicality that the Predators were bringing to Quinn Hughes. Remember, early in game four, he took that double hit from, I believe, Zucker and Sissons and was doubled over on the bench and missed his next shift. And JT Miller said to me, it's the same thing we're doing to Roman Josi or trying to do to Roman Josi. If I'm the Predators, I'm trying to take a run at Quinn Hughes every chance I get, just like we're trying to take a run at Roman Josi every chance we get. And I do think that Roman Josi has played a little bit more like the Roman Josi we know in the past couple of games. Of course, he had the great move to score the power play goal the other night. But I mean, it goes without saying that you need Roman Josi to play at a Norris Trophy level in order for this team to win the series. And I do think that Quinn Hughes, although he has 5 assists in the series, he did make that fabulous play, juking Gustav Nyquist out of his skate before the game tying goal in game four with 8 seconds left. But I feel like he has not been his best self in the series either. So, you know, if the win, you know, for one of these teams to emerge victorious, I think either Hughes or Josi is going to have to play a big part in that.
And even with that, Adam, I understand that he's not a finalist, but for the Predators to win this series, you also need UC Saros to be playing at a Vezina Trophy caliber level.
Yes. Yes. I absolutely. And look, that goal he gave up the other night from Zadorov, that was a bad goal. The Sportlogic expected value model had that shot at 1.1%, meaning that it had a 1.1% chance of going in based on its expected goal model, which is not good. But to his credit, he shook it off and he played well and he stole that game. Analytically, he stole that game, as we talked about the other day. So you're probably going to need at least one, if not two, more performances like that from UC Saros as the Predators are going to advance past the Canucks and face the Oilers in round two.
It was such a low percentage shot that it's one where the coach is probably saying, no, 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 don't, no. Oh, yeah, great job, yeah, great shot. You know, that's what Hal Gill said. I think my coach would bench me if I tried that shot. But give him credit. He put a good shot in there, and he fooled UC Saros.
From Zadorov, from the outside, from a sharp angle, not a guy who could typically hit that shot.
And thank goodness for Alexander Carrier, because if the Predators had lost that game, imagine that hanging over Juuse Saros' head for the rest of the offseason. That muffin of a goal that he gave up to Nikita Zadorov. Adam Vingan, Adam, really appreciate you for stopping by and breaking all of this down with us. You can find Adam's most recent article on sportsnet.ca. And you know it's a Canadian website because Adam used a C in the word offense.
Yeah, and the other day I used the letter U in the word favor.
Very Canadian.
He is an international man. Adam Vingan, thanks for stopping by, Adam, and enjoy the game tonight.
All right, guys, thanks.
All right, appreciate it. Adam Vingan, he's the best. And it's a really interesting and detailed article on Sportsnet. Breaking down all of the numbers and all of the analytics, kind of breaking down Vancouver's offensive struggles so far in the series. So give it a read. Coming up next, I want to get into Coach Willie's keys to victory tonight for the Nashville Predators in Game 6, plus your phones as well. Like we said, it's your day. It's a Predators game day. It's Game 6 day. So we are right to you as well. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, hey, you can join Cromwell Media along with local athletes and musicians at Hermitage Golf Course on June 20th for the 615 Open. Make a difference while supporting Souls for Souls. Every $20 raised goes to a new pair of shoes for a local child experiencing homelessness. Sign up to play or sponsor at 615open.com.